The U.S. Supreme Court has thrown an unexpected monkey wrench into the criminal justice system. Yesterday, a combination of the court's most conservative and most liberal justices teamed up to tell many states and the federal government the system you use for sentencing convicted criminals to prison is likely unconstitutional. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
Sometimes big things come in little packages at the Supreme Court, and the case of Ralph Blakely versus the state of Washington is just such a case. Blakely, a man with a long history of mental disturbance, kidnapped his wife at gunpoint when she filed for divorce. Unable to persuade her to abandon her divorce plan, he duct-taped her mouth, put her in a wooden box, and took the box to a friend's house, where he was finally arrested. Blakely subsequently pleaded guilty to second-degree kidnapping with a firearm, an offense punishable under Washington state law by a sentence of 49 to 53 months in prison. The law, however, gives the judge the power to impose a higher sentence if he finds compelling reasons to do so. And in this case, the judge, after hearing the wife's description of the kidnapping, added 3 years to the sentence on grounds that Blakely acted with deliberate cruelty. Blakely appealed the sentence all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, contending that he'd been deprived of his constitutional right to a jury trial when the judge used facts Blakely had not pled guilty to as the basis for raising his sentence. Yesterday, the Supreme Court agreed with Blakely by a 5-4 vote that included the court's two most conservative members and three of its more liberal members. Writing for the court majority, Justice Antonin Scalia said that, for the framers of the Constitution, the jury was the ultimate mechanism for limiting state power. And, said Scalia, the defendant has the right to insist that the prosecutor prove to the jury all facts legally relevant to the crime. The Washington sentencing scheme, he concluded, does not do that because the defendant in this case was punished with a sentence that's 3 years longer than the punishment permissible for the crime he confessed to. The framers of the Constitution, said Scalia, would not have thought it too much to demand that before depriving a man of 3 more years of his liberty, the state should suffer the modest inconvenience of submitting its accusation to the unanimous judgment of a jury. The court's decision will have effects far beyond Washington, for a significant number of other states and the federal government have sentencing schemes that are similar in critical ways.
It is a blockbuster.
Harvard Law professor Bill Stuntz notes that in Washington and elsewhere, judges determine sentences based on so-called sentencing factors. These factors include everything from a defendant's personal history to evidence of other criminal behavior.
All of those sentencing facts, until now, have been found by judges. The court basically says that procedure is unconstitutional. Juries have to find at least most of those sentencing facts. This puts sentencing proceedings in a large fraction of criminal cases in the United States up for grabs.
George Washington law professor Stephen Salzberg served recently as chairman of a special American Bar Association committee appointed to study sentencing systems.
There are probably thousands of defendants who are going to be sentenced tomorrow throughout the United States in federal court and in state courts with guideline systems. And now, most guideline systems are invalid at the moment and will have to be rewritten because this decision, I think, was unanticipated by almost everybody.
Michael Horowitz is a member of the U.S. Sentencing Commission and former Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division.
There are almost 70,000 sentences a year federally, which means several hundred every day. So they have to deal with those immediately.
The variables in these tens of thousands of sentencing procedures are incalculable, as Harvard's Bill Stuntz observes.
In every drug prosecution, the key sentencing issue is what was the quantity of the drugs found? The jury doesn't have to find that issue in the guilt phase of the trial. Until now, the judge finds that issue at the sentencing phase. That changes. In every federal fraud prosecution, the key sentencing issue is how much money did the victims lose?
And as former federal prosecutor Michael Horowitz observes, dollar figures are difficult to determine when you're talking, for example, about how much money was lost by investors or gained by an accused.
There's often substantial litigation over the amount of the loss or the amount of the gain, because it can be looked at so many different ways.
The Justice Department is going to have to provide guidance to federal prosecutors across the country and do it quickly, says Horowitz.
They're going to have to quickly make those decisions here because the cases aren't going to stop.
What's more, he says, people already convicted and sitting in prison are going to go to court claiming their sentences were unconstitutionally imposed. Said one high-ranking federal official, "For law enforcement, this is just unbelievable. Our people are sitting around here wringing their hands and staring off into space, not knowing what to do." Prosecutors and defense lawyers agreed yesterday there will be even more pressure now for plea bargains in the face of yesterday's ruling, and that prosecutors will demand that pleas include waivers allowing defendants to be sentenced as they always have been. Harvard's Bill Stuntz.
Prosecutors who hang tough, basically who want the toughest sentence they can get, they're going to find defendants aren't going to be willing to plead guilty. So prosecutors are going to have to give a little bit.
Joining Justice Scalia in the majority yesterday were Justices Thomas, Stevens, Ginsburg, and Souter. Dissenting were the Chief Justice and Justices O'Connor, Kennedy, and Breyer. Breyer, who was a congressional staff aide some 25 years ago, drafted the legislation creating the federal sentencing guideline system, accused the court majority of a perverse reading of history that Breyer said would in the end threaten the fairness of the criminal justice system and deprive the public of its ability through the legislative process to make the system more equitable and accountable. He said the result of yesterday's ruling would be either what he called a return to the bad old days of indeterminate sentences, when judges had virtually unfettered authority and the system was marked by wide sentence disparities, including race-based disparities, or that legislatures would enact complicated mandatory sentencing systems analogous in their complexity to the Internal Revenue Code. In a system like that, he said, prosecutors would have inordinate power since they determine what charges to bring against a defendant. In a rare spoken dissent from the bench yesterday, Justice O'Connor displayed an unusually passionate tone. The court ignores the havoc it is about to wreak, she said. Over 20 years of sentencing reform are all but lost, and tens of thousands of criminal judgments are in jeopardy. The court's sentencing decision overshadowed another case that had attracted wide attention, the case testing a lower court order that Vice President Cheney turn over documents showing how much influence energy industry executives and lobbyists had in the formulation of the Bush administration's energy policy. The administration had asked the Supreme Court to dismiss the case as a judicial invasion of executive power. But instead, the court punted, sending the case back to the lower court for further examination. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.